Programming on KALW is supported by IAE, presenting An Evening with David Sedaris. Author of the book Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, the NPR contributor will appear at the War Memorial Opera House in San Francisco on Monday, November 16th, and at the San Jose Center for the Performing Arts on Wednesday, November 18th. More information at davidsedarisontour.com. The time is 7 o'clock on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and online at KALW.org.
This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Today there are 31 states that have the death penalty. 19 states and the District of Columbia have abolished the death penalty. Nebraska is the most recent state to have abolished the death penalty. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about should the death penalty be abolished. My guests are Mike Farrell, a political and social activist best known for the TV series MASH. He's president of Death Penalty Focus, which is a national organization. Tara Knight, a specialist in criminal trial advocacy certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. She's on the trial practice faculty of Yale Law School and is a former president of the Connecticut Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Her office is in New Haven, Connecticut. And third, but certainly not least, is Stephen Wagstaff, District Attorney, San Mateo County, California, first Vice President of the California District Attorney's Office. I want you to know that Mike Farrell is my oldest friend. We went to grammar school together. Steve Wagstaff has been my boss for 30 years. Tara and I only know each other by the program here. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Additional funding of the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Mike, can you hear me?
I can hear you a little better, Chuck, but still quite distant.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You come over very well,
okay.
So that's what's important. I don't care if you can't hear me. I'm more interested in the audience hearing you. You have been someone against the death penalty for many years. You've been the president of Death Penalty Focus for a number of years. Let's start the program with your thoughts on this, please.
Okay, certainly. As you suggest, I've been actively involved in working to end the use of the death penalty for over 30 years across the country. For more than the last 20 years, I've been president of Death Penalty Focus, which is, as you said, an abolition organization based in California but operating nationally. I guess the bottom line for me is I think the death penalty is wrong. I believe it's wrong to kill. And I think by using it, we're doing ourselves harm. But to get beyond my personal philosophy, capital punishment, state killing, whatever you want to call it, is because it has been with us since the beginning, is what we have in our system. But that was the case with slavery and racism and the subjugation of women, and we've recognized how wrong these things and other things were, and we've rid ourselves of some of them, and I think we're still working at others, and I think the death penalty is one of them. The death penalty remains part of our criminal justice system, despite the fact that the rest of the world, at least the civilized world, has done away with it in large part. And even as we cling to it as part of our criminal justice system, and in my view, it has become more and more clear that it's more criminal than it is just. I would say that anyone familiar with the system in our country now knows that it is racist in application. It primarily victimizes the poor and the disenfranchised. It's grotesquely expensive as opposed, for example, to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And because it's run by human beings, it ensnares, it makes mistakes, it ensnares and kills the innocent. Over 150 men and women have been tried, convicted, sentenced to death in our country in the modern era, only to ultimately be exonerated and set free, sometimes after surviving for decades under death row's horrifying conditions, and sometimes only hours before being killed. How many have been executed before their innocence was discovered is not known, though we do have some very clear evidence that there are a few, at least. And, you know, I think what I said about the death system is factual. I don't think it's just opinion. I think These are facts that describe our system, and they're known, I think, to both of those of us on both sides of the issue. But they're mostly ignored or rationalized and argued, sometimes accepted by proponents, even in spite of personal discomfort in some experiences I've had, because they say it is the law. And since it is the law, it is their duty to pursue it. Well, in my view, it shouldn't be the law. And in my opinion, it will stop being the law in the not-too-far distant future.
Michael, let me throw something out to you before I turn this over to Steve, because for everyone, I want you to know, before the program, I told Mike I'd like him to take the first few minutes, 5 minutes or so, and then turn to Steve, and then have Steve spend a few minutes, and then have Tara come, and then hopefully this will develop into a conversation. One of the things I would like to bring to you, all of your attention, is in the New York Times editorial on July 18, 2015, there's an editorial entitled "A Death Penalty Advocate's Sad Argument." It refers to Dale Cox, who was the acting district attorney of Caddo Parish, Louisiana, who at one time was a very major death penalty advocate. He tried a lot of death penalty cases. He decided that he, in recent times, was no longer going to run again as district attorney. And he said that what happens is, in this kind of prosecution, it is apparently very, very difficult and very emotionally disturbing for people. Mm-hmm. And he said that the reason now he has turned against the death penalty is because it dehumanizes not just those put to death, but everyone involved in the process, from the prosecutors who seek it to the juries who impose it and the executioners who carry it out. What comments do you have about that before I turn to Steve?
I often quote the teachings of Paulo Freire, the Brazilian educator, who said, "To dehumanize another is to dehumanize ourselves." And I think that's exactly what's happening. When I said earlier that it is doing harm, I believe maintaining this system is doing harm to all of us. I think the people we appoint to do the actual killing suffer. And I think there are any number of instances wherein that is very evident. But I think it goes beyond that. I think those of us in society who go along with it, who don't stand up and oppose it, silence gives consent in the law, and I think we are then responsible.
Let me turn now to Steve Wagstaff. For those of you who may have tuned in a little bit late, you were just listening to Mike Farrell, a political and social activist. You may remember the incredibly popular series MASH. Mike was one of the stars of that. He's now president of Death Penalty Focus, a national organization. I'm now going to turn to my boss of 30 years, Stephen Wagstaff. He's the district attorney for San Mateo County in California. He is the first vice president of the California District Attorneys Association. And Steve, I wonder if you would respond to some of the things that Mike has said. And one of the things that I'd like you to focus on at some time during the program is that there is a statistic that has come out done by a research done by Professor Samuel Gross of the University of Michigan, who runs the National Registry of Executions. He co-authored this in 2014 and has found that about 4% of defendants sentenced to death in the United States since 1973 to 2014 were innocent. So would you mind making a few comments?
Sure. Thank you. You know, Mike just put out some points which I respect him for. Every citizen's entitled to have their opinion and express it. My job is in two categories, and that is, number one, as he noted, as a prosecutor who enforces the law that the people put in. My second is the what we do for every prosecutor, which is we say your personal views must control, We never ask a prosecutor to handle one of these cases if he or she does not believe in it. Again, my experience runs from I've been 36 years. I'm 38 years with the DA's office, 36 of them involved in every death penalty decision made in my county. Now, what I can't do is speak to what's gone on in other parts of the country. I can't speak to what went on in Illinois other than what I read. It was deplorable. Things we've heard from down in Louisiana where that prosecutor was from or other parts of the country. I can't and won't. I will speak to the 38 years I've been in the state of California. And I think there is a different standard here in this state. And that I mean by that, I mean is what the resources that we give to the defense in order to ensure that these cases are properly defended is unmatched anywhere. I guarantee you that of all the death penalty cases, and I've been involved in hundreds of decisions on these cases, and I have personally prosecuted five of these cases, I know that the defense had the equal to or more resources than I did. And I think that's a good thing, because I want to make sure that the people who are accused of these crimes are absolutely unequivocally going to get the best defense that they can. And it's two lawyers in every case and everything else. So California, I think, has some standards. We don't have enough time to go through all of them, but to talk about that. When we talk about the findings of the 2014 study that said there were perhaps 4%, as high as 4% of innocent people on there, that's not California. I guarantee that. And the numbers always have to be watched. I don't know how they accumulated their stats. I happen to know there was a case in our county where the person was given the death penalty back in 1986. He was later, the case was reversed due to juror misconduct. And 15 years or 18 years later, we made a decision that we were not going to seek death on the retrial. We went back and retried that case, and he was sentenced to life without possibility of parole. In a listing of cases of innocence shown, he was on that list. So that, on personal knowledge, gives me some concern about the numbers. But I understand that it's certainly a possibility because humans are frail. But the real question that I pose then is, well, why should there be a death penalty? And again, I am not seeking to change anybody's mind on it. All I want people to do is be educated and think about it and form their opinion. Many of the things that Mike just said are completely accurate. It is expensive.
It's terribly expensive.
And it takes too long. I personally believe it does not need to be. I do agree with Mike. If California's death penalty law, as it stands today, if it does not change, then we should not keep it. Mm-hmm. It is a system that exists today where people, the last death penalty case I did in 2010, the man was given the death penalty, he got a lawyer 4.5 years later. That's not right. That's not.
When you say he got a lawyer 4.5 years later, what do you mean?
That means on appeal.
I see.
When he got his appeal, that is the standard time running now, 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
Because they can train. Lawyers can be trained. There's a system. There is a proposal to try and change the law. Now, many people say you can't change the law. There's no fixing it. And I respect their view. I don't share it. Mm-hmm. But again, to finish so we can go on and let Tara have some input here, why a death penalty? Obviously, I believe in it. I've experienced the trials. I have attended an execution. I felt I needed to be there so I can fully grasp and think through what I'm doing. I am, in my view, I understand the whole the concept of it dehumanizes. I don't share that view, but I respect the people who hold it and why they hold it. But my personal view is there are some acts that are so horrific, that are so horrible, that so dehumanize the victims and the victim's family and society if they do not respond in the appropriate way, that I think the death penalty for those most evil people is an appropriate punishment. And again,
That's where I'd like to jump in, if I may.
And that's a good time, Tara.
Yeah,
I'm happy
Tara.
If I may.
Yeah.
And I can go ahead and recite all of the reasons and the talking points for, you know, the complete abolition of the death penalty, you know, just like Mike said, from its arbitrariness, its cost, its cruelty, and, you know, its lack of effectiveness. But I think one of the difficulties for the death penalty foes, and I'm certainly one of them, is in getting the goal met, which is nationwide abolition and beyond that, is the emotional argument that Steve speaks to. And, you know, that argument is very empathic to the victims. It is very pro-law and order. It is an argument that people need to accept responsibility and pay a price for what is doubtlessly, some of the most disturbing, violent, horrible crimes we've heard of. And I think as death penalty foes, we need to address these emotional issues and say, hey, we get it. We're not robots. We're not automatons. We're not unfeeling. Certainly if my mother or father or child was murdered, I would feel the need for vengeance the way victims' families do. But as a society, we cannot base our laws and our responses to violence or other transgressions in vengeful and emotional ways, in ways that I would argue are barbaric and Talibanic. We need to be, as a society, rational and reason-based for the protection of all of us. And even if the crimes, as Steve said, are cruel, sadistic, and brutal, we cannot act in kind as a society and as a country.
Tara, let me throw something to you, because this has not been mentioned either by Mike, you, or Steve at this point. Is the death penalty a deterrent, in your opinion?
Absolutely is not a deterrent, and it's been proven again and again, by study after study. And I don't think Steve would debate that. So I think what we're looking at in terms of the death penalty, in terms of the reasons we are for against it, the only reason is vengeance. And I don't think that is an appropriate reason for this kind of barbaric act. And I am a criminal defense lawyer. I am not speaking from some lofty ivory tower or as an academic. I speak as someone who is in the criminal courts day after day after day. And I can unequivocally state that our criminal justice system is profoundly broken. And frankly, I am not one of those people who say, oh, it's the best there is. It's got problems, but it's the best there is. It is not the best there is. We have an epidemic of police that test the lie. We have a system that affords undue and undeserved deference to the police, a system where until recently it accepted confessions and eyewitness identifications as absolutely sacrosanct, a system where it discriminates against minorities and the treatment of minorities, and the system is so weighted against them. And what has happened is that it has built this combustible distrust among the minority community that we're seeing in places such as Ferguson today. We cannot trust the system to mete out this kind of punishment, this ultimate punishment.
Steve, do you have some brief response, and then I want to come. Then I hope the three of you will have a conversation. What response do you have regarding deterrence?
Well, I would say to Tara, I think a lot of the points you make are very understandable and ones I wouldn't quarrel with in any fashion. I don't like it. I'm sad that so much of what you said on that, but you're not talking about the death penalty alone. You're talking about our criminal justice system from top to bottom. And I understand the views, and I'm saddened by where it is today, and we'll continue to work to see if we cannot improve that. The one question I had about the deterrence when I've read the studies is, and I know, they're, as you say, Tara, they completely indicate that it is not a deterrent. The studies work by talking with people who committed the crime to find out did they even think for a second, and they didn't. What we'll never know, and I just call it an imponderable, which is how many people actually were deterred. We'll never know. Mm-hmm. I can't say that, but Tara's right. That's what the studies show, and I've always just questioned, how do we know? Because you can't go out and ask the people who didn't commit the murder.
That's right.
Because there's no answer way to get it. That's always been my concern about the studies.
The data shows that the states without capital punishment have homicide rates at or below the national rate. So in that sense, I appreciate what you're saying. I mean, that's the imponderable, the one you will never know. But the hard fact that we do know is that there is really little deterrent effect based on every study conducted so far. I mean, that is what is the truth, and that is what the studies show.
Mike, what do you have to say about deterrence?
No, I think every criminologist who has studied the case demonstrates that there's no real deterrence. If demographically similar cities in states, one that has the death penalty and one don't, have been shown to be less violent in the states that do not have the death penalty. It's just a fact that is very clearly known. I just wanted to respond to a couple of things Steve said. Ernest Graham, Troy Lee Jones and Oscar Lee Morris are three men who, unlike what you said, were not commuted to life without. They were freed here in California. Another case that I think you may know something about is that of Thomas Thompson. Tommy Thompson was executed here in this state, and seven prosecutors, seven people in your position, stood up on behalf of Thompson and said the prosecution of that case was inappropriate and should not have gone forward. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, of course, agreed, but the Supreme Court shut them down, and Thompson was executed. So we do have cases where people are wrongly convicted, and it's not just a mistaken representation on a list. Here in California, we now have people sitting on our death row who have at least arguable cases for commutation, or in fact cases of innocence in the case of a couple. And as you know, you talked about how wrong-headed it is for us to be in a situation where a convicted murderer who's been sentenced to death doesn't get an attorney for 5 years. It's 5 years is a short time today in terms of the people in San Quentin that I'm familiar with. And Judge Cormac Carney has a case that wherein he ruled the California death penalty to be unconstitutional based on the length of time it takes in the one case, the Jones case, that he has presided over. So that's going to be argued here on the 9th at the end of this month, as I understand it, and it'll be very interesting.
But what's also, Mike, is troubling is the arbitrariness of it in terms of how it's personality-driven, how, depending on the views of a particular prosecutor in a particular district, how they would opt to go for a death penalty case. In Connecticut here, in a radius of 20 miles, we had two prosecutors, one who was very much pro-death penalty, one who was averse to it. So just by the wild card of where the crime was committed geographically, this person could face life or death. And these are the kinds of arbitrary factors that, advance the argument that this is something that should not stand in a civilized society.
In that it takes so many years for these cases to come to a conclusion, and sometimes decades. What is the situation, frankly, that... Terry, you feel with this, do you, I think you've already said this, do you believe in our country that our criminal justice system, in particular the death penalty area, is broken?
The system is broken. It is so mired with so many issues in regard to police and regarding lying and test-a-lying, they call it, and in systematic prejudice, and a host of problems that really apply across the spectrum to every crime. And if the system is that broken for, your regular garden variety crimes, we certainly shouldn't take comfort in knowing that it works, because it doesn't in the situations where death, life and death are at stake here. Thankfully, in Connecticut, they've abolished the death penalty, even after some very horrendous and notorious crimes. We had the very, very notorious crime of the Cheshire murder case, where two individuals went into a physician's home and raped and killed his wife and burned his two daughters to death in a home. And even after that, the state did abolish the death penalty because there was a realization among the legislators, among the courts, among the people who know, who are here and deal with these matters on a daily basis, that it does not work. It doesn't work in any way, and the only reason for it is pure vengeance. And again, that has no place in a civilized, rational society.
Steve,
in a
please.
Humane society.
Tara, can you help remind me, I may be wrong on this, when Connecticut abolished it, did they abolish it for the people who were already on death row? Or did
no.
they do as you said?
They did not.
So it really became sort of a political thing, didn't it? Because they didn't make the decision it should be out altogether.
Well, it's in the court system right now about whether or not it's going to be retroactive. But no, you're right. There are I don't remember the number of people on death row, but it's a relatively low number.
Right.
It's under 10.
Right.
But those people are now appealing and saying that it should be retroactive. I think the proponents want it to get it passed, and I think. I mean, the politics did come into play here, absolutely.
Let me throw out another point to all of you, the three of you, if I may. Do you feel that from the families of the victims who have been murdered, do you feel that if life without possibility of parole were to become the law of this country, do you feel that would help the families who are suffering from all of this, where it takes sometimes decades to decide whether or not the person who's been convicted of homicide will either be put to the death penalty or not?
I wouldn't presume to know what would make them feel better. I mean, that would be very presumptuous, but there are indications that some family members, even in the Boston bombing case, the Boston Marathon bombing case, I know there were some victims' families who did not want the death penalty trial, did not want the years of appeals and appeals. They wanted a life sentence without the possibility of parole so that they can move on with their lives. Not that it would grant them the word of closure, which is bandied about so many times, but they wanted it over with. So there are victims' families who do prefer to end it rather than to continue on, ad nauseum for decades sometimes.
Mike, what are your comments? What are your comments about that?
There's a national organization called Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation, which has come to oppose the death penalty on that very grounds. They, like Judge Kaczynski on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, refer to the process that they are put through to go through this appeal after appeal process. As re-victimizing. They have to replay this horrifying incident in their lives again and again and again, whereas if they had a simple trial and life without parole was the result, they could move on with their lives because they knew it had been adjudicated, finalized, and they, as has just been said, it's not a function of closure. Nobody gets closure when a loved one is killed. But they at least can reconcile themselves to the fact that the perpetrator is gone away for the rest of his or her natural life, and they can move on with their lives.
Let me interrupt the three of you at this point. We will continue live in the Bay Area, live on the Internet at www.klw.org. We continue live on the public radio satellite. But for all of you to understand this, we record the first half hour. That is then sent out to 15 other stations in California, which air the program the following week. So we're going to take a brief moment here. All right. It is California time. It is 7:27:30. For those of you who are listening to us live, and today is August 12th, 2015, I'm going to give you a toll-free number. I would like your input. I would like you to call in, ask some questions, make some comments if you like. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, that's toll-free wherever you are, anywhere in the United States, you can call that. Let me tell you, if you tune in a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. This is a program which is live in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's live on the Internet. It's live on the NPR public radio satellite. The topic is, should the death penalty be abolished? My guests are Mike Farrell, a political and social activist best known for the TV series MASH. He's president of Death Penalty Focus, a national organization. Tara Knight is a specialist in criminal trial advocacy certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. She's on the trial practice faculty of Yale Law School. She's a former president of the Connecticut Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Her office is in New Haven, Connecticut. And in the studio with me is Stephen Wagstaff, District Attorney, San Mateo County. Steve's been my boss for 30 years. He's first vice president of the California District Attorneys Association. And so if you would like to call in, please do so. Don't be bashful. I think it would be interesting to get your input. And before we take the first call, let me just mention this to you. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco as well as Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, California, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. I think this is probably copied or it's the same throughout the United States. You can call your own through your local bar association, tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced, set you up for a half an hour consultation with the attorney. In California, with minor exception, for a half an hour consultation with the attorney, you will pay somewhere between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep the lawyer referral service going. So join us with your questions, your comments, your concerns, 866-798-8255. We're going to start with Jeremy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just had a question. I'm sorry, I'm terrible with names, but for the death penalty advocate. And my question is that, you know, this is inherently a human system, therefore it's going to have mistakes. And so eventually innocent people are going to get killed if you have a death penalty. So my question is, how many innocent people do you think it's okay to execute?
And that's it, Jeremy. Okay, all right, that's quite a question. Thank you very much for the question. Turn your radio back up, if you would. Steve? Quite a question.
That's an easy one. Yeah. The answer is zero. Nothing's acceptable. But I disagree with his premise that it's necessarily that there will be an innocent person executed. That I do not agree with. We have a system that, again, everything's human, but that does not mean there will be an innocent person executed.
Any other comments on that, Mike or Tara?
Well, sure. Cameron Todd Willingham is a name that's made the news in Texas time and time again, pretty clear evidence that he was wrongly executed. Carlos de Luna, there's a book out recently about the wrong man, the wrong Carlos being executed. Ruben Cantu was also executed in Texas. Sam Millsap, the attorney who prosecuted him, the former DA who prosecuted him, has now converted and said he, as a result of that experience and as a result of learning from the primary witness that Cantu was in fact not present at the time of the crime, he has become a very strong, outspoken opponent of the death penalty. And the case I mentioned, the California case of Thomas Thompson, I think, is one that deserves a lot of attention.
You know, one question in light of what Jeremy's question was, is not a sentence of life imprisonment without the opportunity for parole just as significant, if not even more significant, than someone being executed? Steve, please.
No, I don't agree with that.
Why not?
Let me tell you about a guy named Allen. And I don't want to go through facts. I don't want to be the prosecutor who goes through gory facts. But Mr. Allen was serving a life sentence in the California prison and orchestrated murders from prison. Mm. Serving life in prison. So, no, for me, there are certain people that know when they commit that type of a crime, you must look at a more serious punishment. So, and the other part with life without prison, I ask, and every time I discuss this, every time there's an issue,
life without parole.
And what I say is, can you guarantee for me, will anybody who I'm in a discussion with on this, will you promise me that we will make part of the bill abolishing the death penalty that life without parole will not be touched? It will remain the law. And every time I've had that debate, I haven't had a single person on the other side say, no, because the next step is to eliminate life without parole.
Oh,
I know that.
I see.
It's there. It's part of the agenda. And so to that extent, I don't think that's the answer.
All right. Any comments from Tara or Mike on that?
No, I would like the same guarantee that you can guarantee us that no innocent person will be executed. And to say that it would absolutely not happen, I think that is at best disingenuous. I mean, you have people who are snitches who testify. You don't know what their motivations are. You can't read inside their, you can't get inside their head. You don't know what an agenda of in New York, we have a big problem now with one police detective who extracted false confessions from myriads of people. So as best as your intentions may be, you can't speak to the motivations and intentions of people who are part of the system, such as other witnesses who are fallible in terms of either their integrity or their human senses. So you cannot guarantee that innocent people will not be executed. And if innocent people are being executed, that is unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable.
All right, let's take another call. Rue, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chuck. Your last comment sort of speaks to what my comment was, but I being up front, I've been against the death penalty for as long as I can remember, and I actually don't even care if the person is guilty, and if they're definitely guilty, like that's a different argument, even someone who's like really guilty. And I've been in a job where I've read some trial transcripts and appeal transcripts, and I know I have no illusions about the absolute horrors of the crimes that some people commit still against the death penalty. But my comment is really more for Mike and for death penalty focused people and death penalty opponents, is how can we change the terminology so that instead of saying life without parole, we say death in prison. We say this person's being sentenced to death in prison. And one more thing, actually, for the prosecutor, for Steve, I think his name is someone, think about Charles Manson. I mean, he was sentenced under the old law. He comes up for parole. And I know you're all really rational and all that, but seriously, can anyone look in their heart and say, oh, yeah, someday Charles Manson's going to be paroled? That's kind of an aside. That's not an argument because it's not rational. It's just...
Well, let's get some comments on death in prison, Rue. Thank you very much.
Okay,
Tara, go ahead.
You're giving me the question?
Yeah, if you would. Death.
Absolutely. No, I think the terminology, in terms of trying to persuade people to come around to what I think is the appropriate mindset, sometimes the terminology needs to be changed. And I think the caller has an excellent point that, and I think there's been a little of that when you sentence someone to natural life or even without the possibility of parole as opposed to just without parole. Perhaps we can come up with, other terminology that might make it more palatable to people knowing that someone is going to die in prison as opposed to possibly being released.
Mike, do you have any comments about that?
In Norway, the man who killed 76 young people is not going to be sentenced. He's not going to be executed, and he's not going to be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, because they have no such a sentence in Norway, and nor do they have it in most of Europe. But what they do have are enhancements, and every time the end of the sentence comes up, there are considerations. He is examined. The decision to incarcerate him is examined. And they can put another 5 years or another 10 years or whatever they determine appropriate on to the end of the sentence. So I think there are ways that civilized communities can dispatch the responsibility of seeing to it that a dangerous person never walks the streets again. I'm frankly not thrilled with the idea of requiring death. Whether it be death at the hands of the state or death at the hands of the state by, attrition.
Well, okay, Mike. Thank you. Thank you very much. Steve, what do you think about the terminology? Whether you agree with life imprisonment without the opportunity for parole, what do you think about changing the wording death in prison? Do you like that?
No, wouldn't matter to me. Tara said, that's fine. That's a marketing issue. I understand, and that isn't where the issue rests for me. I respect what both Rue and Tara and Mike had to say on it.
All right. Armin, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you for taking my call. I am one of the people that is opposed to the death penalty, except for rogue cops, lousy judges, politicians, and a few other groups. But anyway, my sense is that we can either look at it as revenge and kill them, but my sense is that it's not really a punishment because they're dead. If they have to spend the rest of their life behind bars, then they are spending time and without their freedom for a long period of time, and they have lots of time to think about what they did without getting out, especially for the vicious kinds of crimes.
Well, let's get some comments on that, Armin. Thank you very much for calling. And we did hear you in spite of the sirens behind you, whatever was going on. But thanks. Turn your radio back up, if you would. Mike, what comments do you have for Armand?
I think he was being somewhat ironic.
You mean about killing the bad judges?
I will say that most of the people I have had association with, and by that I mean visited in prison, talked to about the issue, will say that life in prison without the possibility of parole would be a worse sentence from the perspective of those people on the receiving end of it than would death. They would rather die at the hands of the state than be kept in prison for the rest of their lives. So for those people who are, you know, revenge-bound, I think LWOP, as it's known in the trade, should be a perfectly satisfying reaction.
Yeah. Tara, any comments?
Well, you know, I hesitate to speak on behalf of another human being who's facing, you know, that issue. I think the instinct to live is a strong one. So as much as people might say they rather die, than I hear that all the time when I'm talking with my colleagues, I'd rather be dead than spend the rest of my life in prison. I think when push comes to shove, the instinct to live is pretty strong. However, there have been, you know, numerous cases where there have been individuals who have been sentenced to death who have looked to have a voluntary execution and waive their appeals. It's happened here in Connecticut. There was a notorious serial killer, Michael Ross, who wanted to waive all of his appeals and be put to death immediately, and that wound its way up the system before, in fact, he was executed. That would be my comment on that subject.
All right. Again, the number, we do have some open phone lines here if you'd like to call in on our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, on Your Legal Rights with my guests, Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney, San Mateo County in California, Tara Knights, Specialist in Criminal Trial Advocacy, whose office is in New Haven, Connecticut, and Mike Farrell, former star of MASH, who's president of Death Penalty Focus. And who do we have? Steve. Steve's on the screen there. We nearly lost you, Steve. Are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. So my name is Steve, and all I can say is about the only kind of wisdom that I could see, because I've been wrestling with this whole thing for quite a while, and I feel pretty strongly that a lot of this discussion, I guess it's relevant, but for me, a lot of this seems like a lot of armchair speculation, and I would almost prefer to leave it up to the family of the victim to make that decision, because I kind of feel, unless you are really in that place, I just feel that nobody has the right to decide to let someone spend their life in prison. I mean, if they spend their life in prison, assuming, and maybe this is a big assumption, assuming you know for sure, maybe there's a couple of eyewitnesses and it was no doubt about it that this person committed, let's say, a particularly heinous crime, does that person deserve to even have a life that evolves, even if they're in prison, where somehow they evolve and they become maybe a good person. Does a person deserve that? Emotionally, I feel no. But I also feel like, well, maybe that's the family of the victim that should make that decision. Personally, I would like to see them, people like that, sent up to another planet on an asteroid and just remove them from the planet. I don't want to study them. I don't want to give them the chance to evolve. You know, other than the fact that it's a really expensive, long process, I would just prefer that they don't exist anymore.
Let me get some comments, Steve.
And I realize that's a mouthful,
yeah.
But I want to leave. I have one question that I would
please,
like to ask
please, quickly,
Mike
quickly, if you
and
would.
Some of the people that are against the death penalty. And the question is, if there's no doubt about it, because there's obviously a lot of arguments like about, you know, you don't want to hurt the wrong person or kill the wrong person. If there's no doubt about it that person did it, there's absolutely no doubt. Do you feel that you don't want the death penalty because you personally don't like the idea because of more like religious reasons or whatever? You don't like the idea of killing someone. It's the old an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Steve, let me get some comments for you because we need to
move along.
Yeah, we need to. I want to get some comments for you. So turn your radio back up. Mike, let me ask you.
I agree with Steve. I don't think that the victims, family members of a murder victim, should be the ones who determine what we as a country do, what we as a state do.
Mm-hmm.
I think we as a state have to make the determination about whether or not we have a law that is civilized and whether or not the laws are met and abided by.
Tara, what do you think of what Steve was saying?
Well, I agree with Mike on that. I mean, even if you take it to lesser crimes, if an individual's wife or husband was shot, not killed, or was attacked, should we leave it up to victims to decide the crime? Victims are not in a position to rationally and reasonably, you know, decide what a crime should be because of their emotional state, their understandable emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly would feel that anger and that cry for vengeance in my heart. But that doesn't mean that's an impulse I should act on or society should act on. Again, we need to be rational and reason-based as a society when it comes out to meeting any kind of punishment, not just the death penalty.
Steve.
Let me add, if I may, Chuck, that I disagree with Steve also about, or not disagree, yes, the answer is yes. I would oppose the execution by the state of anyone, whether he or she was absolutely convinced everybody, had absolutely convinced everybody that he or she was guilty. That's not, for me, an issue. I believe that we shouldn't be in the business of killing. And I think that what we are earning ourselves as a nation as a result of this process of determining that someone is who crosses a certain line is no longer a worthwhile, no longer a human being worth the dignity that that he or she is granted by birth, then what we do is slip down a very, very ugly, slippery slope, and I think it takes us to places that we, if you look at the newspapers today, we are rapidly approaching if we haven't passed.
Steve Wagstaff, what comments do you have with respect to caller Steve's comments?
I think you should make a note, Chuck, that you have found a point that all three of us, Mike, Tara, and I, agree on. This should not be victims' family.
Yeah.
I have stood up in front of a jury in a death penalty case and said there's a reason we do not allow the family of the victims to make the decision or the family of the accused. We have 12 jurors in the community who make the decision. As to Mike's point, I certainly, again, I respect his view. That's a heartfelt one that he has. It's one that I don't feel, and again, of the majority of the states in this country do not share. And as a democracy, we do keep it, and that's where it is. And Tara will fight in court, as she should, to make sure that the law is complied with. But that is the law today.
For those of you who may not be familiar with death penalty focus, I want to give you the website for it in case you want to find out something more about it. It's death penalty. This is all one word, deathpenalty.org, and that goes right to death penalty focus, in case you're interested in seeing what that national organization is doing. We do have a few more minutes in the program, and I'd like to invite you, if you have some comments, question or whatever, I still want to encourage you to call in, because I don't want you to do it when we're like 3 minutes before the top of the hour. So the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. For those of you who may not be familiar with how we do this program, every month, usually the fourth or last Wednesday of the month, while I'm doing the on-air program, we have what's called Call a Lawyer Night. And there will be here at the station, KALW in San Francisco. And for those of you not familiar with KALW, if you're listening to the program on the public radio satellite, KALW is owned by the San Francisco School District. It's the oldest non-commercial radio station this side of the Rockies. It's part of the National Public Radio. But on the last Wednesday, fourth Wednesday of the month, we do Call a Lawyer. And when we do that, and I'm doing the live program, I will have maybe 7-8 attorneys in the conference room here where you can talk with them off the air. No obligation whatsoever. And that number, in case you want to jot it down, we'll be doing that again on August 26th. And we have a variety of legal topics that you can talk to lawyers about. Again, no obligation on your part. It's a public service these attorneys are performing. They're members of the San Francisco Bar, members of the San Mateo County Bar, and that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And I want to have Marie join us. Marie, welcome on the program.
Hi. My comment has to do with the motivations of law professionals and the overarching desire to win the case at all costs. I think when lives hang in the balance, I think that the justice system is just fundamentally flawed. And adding to that, that there really is no oversight for, say, prosecutorial misconduct, there really is nothing. You can write a letter to the state bar and never hear anything back about it. And the Commission on Judicial Performance is a very, very sad state of affairs. Or if you want to complain about a judge, you sacrifice all your rights. You have no right to privacy anymore. And you have no representation. So the district attorneys have a lot of political power, and there's just no oversight.
Well, let me get some comments from District Attorney Steve Wagstaff on this. Thank you very much for calling. Steve, what comments do you have for Marie?
I don't agree with it. Obviously, I don't agree with it. And number one, I start with, yes, there are prosecutors, there are judges who make mistakes, do things that are wrong, simply wrong and misconduct. But we don't have a system that works like a star chamber. There are, in our state, in my county in particular, there's some excellent attorneys who handle these cases and put us and make sure as the safeguard. There is the judges that act as a safeguard against the abuses and what goes on. There are, as we know, there are appeals that go on forever where appellate attorneys will do everything conceivable to make sure that the flaws in the system are corrected. And she might have been right a number of years ago about, you know, what happens when a prosecutor or a judge makes a mistake and nothing happens. Those days are not the case anymore. There's a whole new approach. Just as in a very public eye, there's things going on with law enforcement officers today. The same thing's going on with prosecutors, judges, and defense attorneys in the system to try and ensure that justice comes out. So she speaks generally, not accurately.
Well, okay.
If I may, Chuck.
Sure, Mike, go ahead.
You mentioned the Commission of Judicial Performance, and I sat on that commission for 3 years. and I'm not quite sure I understood her complaint, but there was no, that I'm aware of, there was no stripping of complainants of their rights. It was quite the reverse. There was an examination of such complaints and the adjudication of the determination of what should be done to the person sitting on the bench if he or she was found to be guilty of a of a wrongdoing.
And Mike, when you were sitting on the commission for the correct title of that?
Commission for Judicial Performance.
For Judicial Performance. You were sitting as a public member, not as an attorney, because you are not an attorney. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And therefore, I think you would have a perspective where you would perhaps be more critical as a public member as opposed to maybe having been a judge or being an attorney. And so I appreciate your making mention of that, really. What we have, we're getting close to the end of the program, but Mike, do you want to have some final thoughts at this point?
You know, I have a very strong feeling that the damage that is done to the moral fabric of the nation by the continued use of the death penalty is being writ large in our society. I have called over time the death penalty the lid on the garbage can, and that once we remove that lid, we are going to be faced with the rotten, stinking, maggot-infested mess that is our criminal justice system in general, and hopefully forced to do something about it. But I also think that it's very important for us as American citizens to understand that countries around the world that are just as civilized, if not more so, than ours, do very well without the horrifically draconian justice system that we have chosen to employ here in this country. And I think the price that we're paying for violating the fundamental value and dignity of individual human beings is visible to us if we just look at our history, current history.
Mike, let me get some final comments from Steve,
sure,
and then from also from Tara. Steve, would you take half a minute, please?
I will. It is what was just noted is talking about civilized nations. I think Mike started out by saying no civilized nation has the death penalty. Mm. I don't know what we call the country of China, which does have that. Mm. But on a more important note, I think there are cases, and I believe this, that warrant the death penalty because of the evil involved, and I do not think it does the damage. I think it enhances our sense of justice. I respect difference of opinion. To conclude with, though, it is the people of this country who will make that decision in each state as to what is right and what they want to have in their state. As Tara noted, Connecticut can eliminate it. That's fine. In California, if the voters say no, I will do it. But otherwise, I think it's the right thing.
Tara, 30 seconds maximum, please.
Okay. Really, people in this country have voted for other terrible things like keeping slavery. So I don't know if it's all just about what people vote for. I think we're going to look back on this time as a dark time. We've done away with other punishments like drawing and quartering people. I think this is akin to that, although we don't realize it yet, but we'll look back in 100 years and realize it's an uncivilized behavior that, as Mike says, does damage not only to the fabric of the country, but also to the people involved, including the jurors who have to sit and render decisions in these cases.
All right. I want to thank you. I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program. Tara Knight, specialist in criminal trial advocacy in New Haven, Connecticut. Steve Wagstaff, District Attorney, San Mateo County in California, First Vice President of the California District Attorneys Association, and Mike Farrell, my longtime best friend since we went to grammar school, who is the President of Death Penalty Focus, a national organization. Thank you very much for joining me on the program and joining us, all of us.
Thank you, Chuck.
I want to let you know what we're doing next week. The topic is the need for child molestation and sexual abuse prevention education for children. My guests are Richard Alexander, a nationally recognized personal injury and consumer protection attorney, Tanis Crosby, CEO of Silicon Valley, California, YWCA, and Eugene Hyman, the retired Santa Clara County Superior Court judge. And let me just mention one other thing to you. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Trust and State Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. I thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.